Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivadadhari. Gopi Janavallabha Girivadadhari. Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari. Vishnupad Paramahansa Paravajakacharya Sadhisi Srimad's Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai Ananta Koti Vaishnavinda Ki Jai Nama Om Vishnupadaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharani Nirvisesha Sunyavadi Paschachadesha Tarani. Well, he's going to speak mostly.
So I was informed we speak on the third canto, 13th chapter, text number 46. Is that correct?
It's up there on the screen.
Etyupastiyamano, yeah. Okay. Omagyana timirandhasya gyana anjana shalakaya chakshuran mityangjena tasmai shri guruve namaha shri chaitanya manobhishtang sthapitang jena bhutale Soyam Rupa Kadamakhyam Dadati Savadantikam. Narayanam Namaskritya Narang Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jayamudirai Nashta Praishva Bhadreshu Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavat Yuttama Shloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtiki Shrinutam Sukata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Vidyantastho ribat yabadrani vidhunoti suritsita. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Maitreya uvacha, iti upasthiyamano, aso, Ityupasti yamano so. Ityupasti yamano so. Ityupasti yamano so. Ityupasti yamano so. Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih. Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih. Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih. Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih. Salile. Salile swa kurakranta kurakranta salile swa kurakranta salile swa kurakranta Salile swakura karanta. Swa, not swa. Upadatta. 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 Avita. Avanim. Upadatta. Avita avanim upadatta vatavanim upadatta vitavanim upadatta vitavanim Maitreya uvacha Ityupasthayisti yamano so Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih Salile Sakura Krantha Upadatta Vitavanim Ityupasti yamano so Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih Salile Sakura Munibhir Brahma Vadibhih Salile Sukrakranta Upadatta Vitavanim Maitreya Uvacha Tiamano so Upadatta vitavanim Ityupasthayamano so Maitreya Uvacha. The sage Maitreya said, Iti. Thus. Upastiyamana. Being praised by. Aso. Lord Bor. Munibhi. By the great sages. Brahmavadibhi. By the transcendentalists. Salile. On the water. Sakura Akrante. Touched by his own hooves. Upadatta. Placed. Avita. The maintainer. Avanim. The earth. Translation. By his divine grace, Srila Prabhupada. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. So we normally say in response. The sage Maitreya said, the Lord, being thus worshipped by all the great sages and transcendentalists, touched the earth with his hooves and placed it on the water. Purport. The earth was placed on the water by his inconceivable potency. The Lord is all-powerful, and therefore he can sustain the huge planets either on the water or in the air as he likes. The tiny human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. Man can give some vague explanation of the laws by which such phenomena are made possible, but actually, the tiny human brain is unable to conceive of the activities of the Lord, which are therefore called inconceivable. Yet the frog philosophers still try to give some imaginary explanation. So I'm a frog philosopher. I like to make the argument, it's perhaps a little unusual for the standard ISKCON argument. I like to make the argument that there are many stories, biblical stories, Islamic stories, Quranic stories, there are stories in the Puranas, there are stories that the scientists make up. Now, this is offensive to the scientists to say that there are stories. But the stories that the scientists provide don't provide any system of morality. They don't provide any prevention of humans for destroying the earth. So I especially point out this, I've written some books about Vedic culture and the environment, so I especially like to point out this point that with all the scientific stories, the Big Bang or the evolution story, or all these other stories, many stories that the scientists have, both physical scientists, natural scientists, and social sciences scientists, they don't contain anything to control humanity. Religions throughout the ages have tried to control humanity's greed, more or less successfully. But we don't have that in science, so therefore, they may object to this causation, but therefore, humans are destroying the earth. Humans are over-exploiting the earth. Exploiting and destroying nature. And this is on science. We were discussing this, Rupa, Las, and I. Two words, culpability and irresponsibility. So the scientific community is culpable. So I think this is a very practical argument. We can argue consciousness, whether the soul has consciousness or There are other arguments. Life comes from life. But my opinion is that this argument of scientific culpability for the destruction of the earth is a very powerful argument. Again, this is my opinion. And they are culpable. Therefore, they are irresponsible. Their stories are useless without something that adjoins those stories, like all of the literatures that prevent greed. What to speak of the Vedas, Puranas, all these wonderful stories. So how does a story prevent over-exploitation? Well, Prabhupada explains that Hiranyaksha was senior moment. That Hiranyaksha was exploiting the earth, that he drew out all the gold from the earth. And he makes this analogous to oil that the modern scientists or modern industrialists, whatever we call them, are extracting the oil. Of course, it's all of us. We are all extracting the oil. We're all attached to the oil. So there's no... So the point is that these stories, that this story about Hiranyaksha, it illustrates all, it contains also an instruction that we have to live in balance with nature, that we have to control our greed. The story of Hiranyakashipu also, Hiranyakashipu forced the earth and the oceans to produce. So this is, I would say, analogous to the modern scientists and technologists and everyone else who forces the earth to produce, forcing the earth by chemicals, by artificial means to produce. So I would say that this is a Hiranyakashipu culture, which forces the earth, forces nature to produce. But there's a wonderful verse in the I want to give Rupala some time to talk. I have a bad record for speaking overtime. So, nobody laughs. It's too early in the morning. These are jokes. Come on, loosen up. So, no, it's too late. You can't laugh now. So there's a wonderful verse at the end of the Bhagavatam, end of the 12th canto, where the earth says that she saw the kings, actually I like to say the people, because we all think we're kings now. We're a democratic society, so we're kings. But the earth says the kings were seeing the kings trying to control her, trying to control the earth, she laughed and said, "Look at these kings, playthings in the hands of death, trying to control me." So I like to present this idea of Vedic culture and the environment, Vedic culture as a solution for environmental difficulties, but of course we can do nothing. We're nothing. The earth can easily wipe us all out. And here we see that the Bohr incarnation, when there was something a little beyond the ability of the earth to deal with, then the Vishnu incarnates and makes things right, makes things correct. So we can only try, but this, I think, is a good leverage for those in modern society, this idea of Vedic culture and the environment. I think it's very powerful. And so, yeah, what? So, no, we'll wait to the end. Could you hand me this book here? So this morning I was going to speak a little bit about Varnashram. This, until now, it was just one. Until now, this was a summary of the last night's class. I've written this book called The Perfect Society, Dayavarnashram. So why did I call it The Perfect Society? It's after Prabhupada in the seventh canto, I've forgotten, 11th, 12th chapter, something like that. Narada Muni is instructing Yudhishthira about the Varnashram, the Varnas and Ashrams, and Prabhupada names the chapters The Perfect Society. So this is The Perfect Society. I'm going to discuss four things and try to keep in time. One is the relationship between Varnashram and Bhakti. Two is the mechanics. I think I'll talk about the mechanics first. The mechanics of Varna and a little about Ashrama. Number three is the scope of Varnashram that Prabhupada envisioned. Number four is Karma Yoga and the relationship of Karma Yoga with Varnashram. So number one, the mechanics of Varnashram. In Bhagavad Gita, I love this is sort of my interpretation, but I love the, for example, mechanics. I love this verse, Dhyayato Vishayan Pungsa. Sorry.
He's here. The verse man is here.
Oh, yeah? What is it like? 257, 259, where we're meditating on the objects of the... Exactly. Another senior moment. So this I see as a mechanical description of the senses and the sense objects and where that attachment leads to. So there's another, I view, mechanical discussion of Varna, how Varna works. So it starts with the verse 40 of the Bhagavad Gita. I didn't open it up, but... So, beginning with verse 39 or 40, Krishna says that everyone in the Dividevyeshu, he says, Prithiving, something like this, on earth, and Dividevyeshu, in the, with the demigods in Divi, in the heavens, the three gunas are predominate. So everyone in the material world, it isn't just on earth, but also among the demigods. This hand, I'll use this hand. So everyone is under the control of the three gunas. So the three gunas determine the characteristics of every individual. And that's called sabhava, our sabhavas, our characteristics. And from sabhavas, it makes us eligible for a svakarma. Sva means individual. Our individual karma. So, karma, and there are, and then Krishna explains four general categories of karmas. That's brahmana. So he calls brahma karma sabhava jam. So brahma karma sabhava jam. Jam means born of or produced of. So the brahma karma is produced of the sabhavas. So your characteristics produce your karma. In other words, karma here means your action, and in this case, your swakarma means your duty, your what you do as a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So based on your characteristics that you're born with, you have jnana vijnana, you have that tendency toward jnana vijnana, so you have the tendency to be a brahmana, and you perform actions as a brahma, sukarma. So then Krishna says that a person can become siddhi. A person can become perfect by performing those sukarmas, those duties, that work. Duty is more like dharma, but that work, sukarma. So, and then he says, how is that? I will explain. And then the next verse he explains how you become siddhi. He says, yato pravritti bhutanam. He says you have to worship abhyacharya. It's funny, I remember all these words. I can't remember the verse. He says that you have to worship the Supreme and perform your duties, perform your sakarma. So what is that Supreme? Yena sarvam idam tatam. I think that's the line. But the meaning is by whom all this is pervaded, and yato pravitting bhutanang. Pravitting means emanates. From whom everything emanates. From whom everything emanates, and by whom everything is pervaded. So you worship that. Of course, it's another way of saying Krishna, the Supreme Personality of God. In the purport, Prabhupada says that, among other things, he says that you offer all the results of your activities to Krishna. That's karma yoga. So I'll discuss that at the end. Number two is the relationship with, that's the mechanics. Number two, and I'll just mention ashram briefly. Prabhupada talks about social classes and spiritual divisions. So he refers to the ashram as spiritual, whereas the others are social. So spiritual has the sense of liberation from the material world. So the four divisions, brahmacharya, grihastha, vanaprastha, and sannyasa, are for liberation from the material world. So spiritual. So they have that spiritual connotation. And the training is to be detached from material life and attached to spiritual life. So even aside from those who accept the Supreme Personality of Godhead as Parabrahman, so maybe they only accept Brahman, maybe they're impersonalists or others. Nevertheless, those four spiritual classes act in society to control humanity's desire to exploit the material energy, to connect with excessively with the material energy. So the brahmanas, brahmana means the devotee of Brahma, or in our case, Parabrahman, and the sannyasis, who are emblems of renunciation. So those two influences, and then the training of brahmachari, and the sacrifice, yajna, that the grihasthas do, all these act for liberation and detachment from the material nature. So ashrama. Now, the relationship with bhakti and the varnas, varnashrama, there's a nice verse, if I can remember it. Varnashrama vatang dharma esha achara lakshana sa eva mad bhakti yuto nikshreya sakara para. So that varnashrama vatang dharma, so it means the dharma of those who follow varnashrama. So in other words, it's kind of a fancy way of saying varnashrama dharma. This is, by the way, the words of Krishna in Bhagavatam speaking to Uddhava about varnashrama. It's a nice several chapters that Krishna speaks himself about Uddhava. Of course, there's instructions by Narada in the seventh canto, and there are instructions by Bhishma in the Mahabharata. But here, Krishna, right in our own Bhagavatam, sort of right in our own neighborhood, there are discussions of varnashrama. So this verse means that varnashrama dharma, those who follow varnashrama dharma, and who practice, who's the second line means the practitioners. Sa eva Mad bhakti yuto. So this is an important point. It should be joined. Yuto means joined with mad bhakti. Joined with bhakti to me. And what is the result? Nikshreyasa kara. Nikshreyasa kara. Kara means enacts. Nikshreyasa means the highest liberation. Highest because the last word, para. Nikshreyasa kara para. So this produces or enacts the highest liberation. So varnashrama is not something inferior. Although Chaitanya Mahaprabhu did say, Eho bhakya. This is external. Varnashrama by itself is external. But when connected with mud bhakti, when connected with the bhakti of Krishna, it's... leads to liberation.
The highest.
Para. He's my editor. So anything I write goes first to him. And he comments. Usually he comments just a few words, 5-6 words. And I have to rewrite the whole chapter. So it's very irritating. So... that's two. Number three is Prabhupada's scope for Varnashram. Now, there are many, and as the movement progressed, in the early days of the movement, Prabhupada indicated that Varnashram was something that he found would be difficult to implement. And then he became more eager as the years went by, especially maybe starting in 75, but especially 76, 77. Those were the last 2 years of Prabhupada's presence here on earth. So in those years, he spoke often of Varnashram College and just Varnashram in general. There's a wonderful conversation on February 14th, 1977 in Mayapur. And I'm not sure if it's that conversation, but in another conversation, he spoke of Varnashram as para upakar. He spoke of Sankirtan often as Paraupakar. Paraupakar is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's own words, saying that this is for the benefit of humanity, of others, but benefit of others. So we don't just sit in the temple and worship Krishna. We try to benefit the world. In every town and village, we spread Sankirtan. In those of us who joined in before there was book distribution and all the other sort of activities for expansion, Prabhupada instructed us to open temples. So right from the beginning, we had this expansion. We're taught from the beginning, Prabhupada taught, that expansion, then book distribution, then all of the other aspects of para upakar. So that's Sankirtan. Then he began to speak of Varnashram, also in terms of para upakar. And he indicated that ISKCON, the way it was structured, was a Brahmana society. That was his idea in the beginning, to collect Brahmanas. And it seems apparent that he gave Brahmana initiation starting in 1968, even to those who were not very qualified. He immediately started to push, okay, now you're Brahmanas. And now, today, we've wonderfully progressed to education like Bhakti Shastri, Bhakti Vai Bhava, Bhakti Vedanta. So wonderful Brahmanas we're trying to produce. Of course, there are many, perhaps, Vaishyas and Kshatriyas, and of course some devotees debate with me about that, but I insist that there are Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas in ISKCON, and some Shudras. But Shudras are 95% of the population, or some percentage like that. There are vast majority are Shudras. So where are our Shudras? I mean, all of you are Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas. But where are the Shudras? I'm being a little tongue-in-cheek. But The point is that we need a lot of those who can serve in the community to do all of the tasks that we need to do. I visit a number of temples and I see how shudras are usually hired from outside. But that's Varnashrama, in my view. The scope, as I said, is para upakar. The scope is wide. And finally, to, in my mind, to fully illustrate the scope of Varnashrama that Prabhupada envisioned, he was talking about going to Manipur. Sarup Damodar was there in Mayapur, and he was speaking about going to Manipur to, I'm not sure if he ever did. You know, Pushkar, if he ever went to Manipur. I don't think he ended up ever going to Manipur. But he was talking about it with the others who were there, Sarup Damodar. So then he said, we'll go to Varnashrama and we'll go to Manipur and establish Varnashrama and convert the entire country to Varnashrama. So this is the scope. It's not a farm, 2 farms, 40 farms, 50, 100, 1,000 farms. It's an entire country. So his idea was that it's a small state, Manipur, and they're already Chaitanya Vaishnavas. The majority are Chaitanya Vaishnavas. So it'll be an easy task. We'll convert them, and we'll set it up as a model for converting other countries or other big populations. So this is the scope of Varnashram. Yes, it's based on an agricultural economy, or agriculture is not a good word. A lot of people discriminate between agriculture, meaning agribusiness, and agrarian, meaning local. Traditional, they also call it traditional economy. So the scope is large populations, Brahmanas, Vaishyas, Kshatriyas, and Shudras. Lots of Shudras. So this is the American population, lots of Shudras. Shudras are in charge of public opinion. All of these singers, actors, sports people, they're all Shudras. You can immediately understand they're Shudras as soon as they open their mouth. Unless they're playing sports or singing songs or acting, they open their mouth and they say Shudra things. So you can easily understand. And this is what sways the population. So I'm not giving any formula or prescription or anything like that. I'm just trying to present these things in this book. And I also say that I think that it's up to the local people, local authorities, to determine how to execute this vision of Prabhupada. And then the end of the book, I give some my own concept. I think that it's possible to leverage Vedic culture or Varnashram culture. I think Vedic culture is easier to understand than Varnashram culture for an outsider. Vedic culture and the environment, I think that's a tremendous lever to use to establish. I also discussed that before I talk about Karma Yoga, just a minute on the relationship. There's an intimate relationship between Sankirtan and Varnashram. Sometimes people think that they're somehow two separate things, Sankirtan and Varnashram. But if you look at the Vedic culture, just look logically at the Vedic culture, Yajna has always been and will be the center of Vedic culture. Prabhupada wrote a very nice article in Bhakti Raghava Swami likes to point this out. In India, he's in charge of Varnashram. This article was written in May 20th, 1956 about Yajna. And in that article, he explains the interrelationship between yagya and varna. Of course, what is our yagya? Yagyai sankirtana prayair. So our yagya is sankirtana yagya. You look at the Vedas, as I started to say, if you look at the culture, the Vedas, all the Vedas about yagyas, maybe to the devas, but yagyas nevertheless. Krishna starts the Bhagavad Gita, chapter 3 and 4. Yagyartat karmano nyatra loko yam karma bandhana. So yagya, everything has to be done for yagya. And then Krishna expands, in chapter 4, expands the meaning of yagya as meditation, as chanting, as all the things. Prabhupada explains in the purport that the limbs of bhakti are all yagyas. So bhakti is also yagya. But yagya is the heart of varnashram society. That means brahmanas, kshatriya, vaishya, shudra. Essentially, they are all cooperating for yagya. And that Prabhupada describes as communism, spiritual communism. That's the meaning. It doesn't mean when Prabhupada says spiritual communism, it means communism. It means the cooperation of the classes, Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, for yagya, and they become one aim, one goal, and that achieves classless society. Communism will never achieve that kind of unity that's there in Varnashram society. The last is Karma Yoga. I'm going to kind of skip over it, except to say that, in my estimation, many people, and a lot of people, many people outside of ISKCON, and perhaps a lot of devotees don't fully understand Karma Yoga. In very simple terms, and this perhaps is a little provocative, but in very simple terms, Karma Yoga means giving 50% of your income. And 25% or 5% or 1%. Prabhupada, when he talks about Karma Yoga, he says, yat kuroshi adishnasi yat juhoshi dadasi yat tat kurushua madarpanam, that it should be offered to Krishna. Whatever we do, yat kuroshi, yat means whatever, kuroshi, you do, whatever you do should be offered to the Supreme. So Karma Yoga is intimately connected with Varnashram. This you can sort of understand if you read carefully Prabhupada's purports. It's more, it's sort of more apparent from the commentaries. Like if you read Bhanu Maharaj's Bhagavad commentary on the Varnashram chapters. Did I say his commentary? His translation, sorry. Vishnath Chakravarti's translation of Srimad, Vishnath Chakravarti's commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, then it's clear that Varnashram is intimately linked with Karma Yoga. Of course, that doesn't mean that there are no pure bhaktas operating within the karma, within the structure of Varnashram. Okay, so I went way over time, but not hugely over.
Changing the topic in a way, or getting back to the topic of this verse. This is the Leelas of the Supreme Lord. Actually, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was talking to some professor, Professor Suthers from Ohio State University back in the 30s. And he was explaining to him that our culture is called avatarvad. That our culture is based on the avatars, the leelas of the avatars. And of course, in contemporary some contemporary scholars and philosophers think that it's mythology. This must be mythology, that God's appearing as all these animalistic forms. In fact, they call it zoomorphism, that a creature is worshipped as God. And they take it as, you know, kind of pagan or very imaginative description. But no, once you accept that, once you accept the idea of an omnipotent God, omnipotent, omniscient, all the great qualities or of supremacy, once you accept that, then God can do whatever he likes. And the description, in fact, you know, I had one of my sons used to say, when we would ask him why he'd done something extraordinary or strange, he would say, "I want to." That was his rationale, "I want to." And we didn't know what to say to that because, you know, that was his outlook, that whatever he wanted to do, he just could do it. And we tried to explain to him, no, you just can't do it. But on the other hand, God can do whatever he wants to, and he can do it spectacularly or in unusual ways. You think, now, why did he become a boar? Not a B-O-A-R. Why did he become a boar? Well, because he wanted to. And also it was appropriate. He was trying to get the earth out of a filthy place. So boars are good at that. And think about the creativity of the Lord, that he appears as a boar. It's a strange choice, you know, from a mundane perspective, to become a boar and to dig the earth out of the polluted waters. And this demon, why is somebody making trouble for the earth? Well, we've just heard in Dayananda's talk, that's what people of demonic intent, they do. They exploit and destroy the earth. And they cause trouble, big troublemakers. And these are great demons. Hiranyaksha was a very powerful demon. And it was the two brothers, Jaya and Vijaya, came and took on the roles of two of the worst demons the universe had seen. And they were causing destruction. They were causing problems everywhere. And so the Lord intervenes in a creative and imaginative way. It takes these different forms. And these forms are glorified throughout the Vedic literature, especially throughout the Bhagavatam. Again, Avatarvad. It's a religion of the activities of the avatars and how they're sporting. It's their play. They're having a fantastic time. You know, it's all enjoyment for them. And they're extremely creative and amazing in what they do. So this is in this verse, it talks about the Lord having hooves, and it talks about how he handled the destructive influence of Hiranyaksha. And Prabhupada is quite disparaging about the mentality of people who think that they can understand the activities of God or the activities of Krishna. He says the human brain cannot conceive how these potencies of the Lord can act. And he says he only credits man with giving vague explanations of the laws of the universe. But the Lord can adjust the laws any way he likes also. So I think it's clear that of the Lord's power to imaginatively create wonderful pastimes in various forms and actually enliven all the devotees. That's his business. So I'll stop there. I think I've got nothing more to say. Take this.
Yes, Pro.
Oh, yeah. Please.
I thought of this verse, and I think it's Adi 8 or 9. It says, Asab Namani Ye Pandita Shako Tansabada Vidyapat Beko Halal Kaha Kaha. Like the Kaviraj Goswami's time, he compared even the pundits to frogs. That Vidyapat. Anyway.
Even the which?
The pundits.
Oh.
The pundits from 500 years ago, and beyond that, obviously, but nowadays, Prabhupada took it as idiomatic that he called them foreign frogs, you know? He, like, immediately discarded any, I think when he was discussing the dialectic book, he said, so foreign frogs, they have nothing to say, you know? In India, at least, they can say stuff. They're allowed to argue, and but they have no basis of knowledge, the foreign frogs. But I'm thinking 500 years ago, a sabnamani, a pandita shakal, means all the pundits, he said, they simply make frog croaking like frogs. So that wasn't foreign. That was like right there in Navadvipa, wherever, you know, Kaviraj Goswami was referring to. Tansabara vidyap, big kolahol. Kolahol means a big noise made by frogs. So just interesting. So there were frogs then. Prabhupada discounted anyone outside of India as a foreign frog. It became nationalistic sometimes, you know. but in Kaviraj's time, then everyone, even the local pandits, they had education institutions, and he wasn't referring to outside Turkey, USA, whatever. He was talking about right there. Those are frogs. So, because Prabhupada, I think he talked about frogs in his purport, right? Frog bait. You could probably find a bunch of references about croaking and frogs.
Yeah, the frog philosophers, he says.
Yeah. So, they speak. Remember in Mayapur in the old days, the frogs were so loud, we only had the Lotus Building, I'm sure before the Lotus Building, but I was there in Lotus Building time, and then certain season, you probably know when it is, the frogs were so loud, because I used to do night guard, and like, rah, rah. I mean, I think you became inured of it, like you totally became, because people were sleeping, but it was really raucous, and then the locals would come right on our property with flashlights and spears and find frogs. I don't know if they shipped them out, export them to other countries, or that they would kill all the frogs right in front of the building at night, because there was no fences or anything. And they were croaking so loud. One time I saw a frog croaking, a little frog, and a cobra was hypnotizing it. And finally, after several minutes, because I was painting and had a midday class or morning, but you could see through the jolly work, and I saw this cobra near the steps, you know, that main steps of the Lotus Building, the ones that would go east, and there was a cobra just hypnotizing. And then whoop! And the frog had time to move, but he was hypnotized by the cobra. And I wasn't going to stop class. You know, in those days we would yell, you know, mystery, mystery, sharp, kill the snake. And then some guy would come and kill the snake. But in the middle of class and do that. Yeah, so they croak. But that's the thing, you get swallowed up by the cobra. I was going to make one little comment. I'm cheating here, but many in the old days when Rupanuga would come, not that old, but one of his themes was, we join, and he got really passionate and say, we join this movement to spread this movement, because I thought of that when you said we didn't do much, you know, just making temples was plenty to do, but still didn't have so many books. There was some literature. We joined it. We get real passionate about that point, and he'd repeat it all the time. We joined this movement to spread this movement. He gets like real militant, like a real Marine, you know how he gets.
I'd just like to comment briefly on this frog that we often, in ISKCON, we often criticize. Of course, Prabhupada criticizes the frog philosophers, but in practice, the scientists, people don't follow the ideas of scientists. They don't care. They just care about the technology, what the technology can provide for them. And what does the technology provide? Sense gratification. Fundamentally, there's health, that's something, but that's also bodily conscious. people, the medical profession. It's a whole argument by itself. But so technology, science, technology, sense gratification. And when somebody has sense gratification, they're emotionally attached to it. So we can provide, we can say that, oh, this is, you're a frog philosopher. I mean, going back to the origin, the science, and the those who have influence in society. But the people in general have tremendous say, and their say is based on their emotional attachments, sense gratification.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it.
Somebody else was actually before you.
It was before me? I can't see over there at all.
She spoke out right in the middle of Pushkar.
Oh, but I had my hand up at the same time as Pushkar. Oh. If that's all right. Hare Krishna. No, I appreciated your comment that about the relationship between Sankirtan and Varnashrama, and it brought to mind one passage from Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, second chapter. Srila Prabhupada cites Madhvacharya quoting from Brahmanda Pramana. He says, O king, the demons think that Lord Vishnu exists because of the Brahmins and Yajna, but factually, Hari is the cause of everything, including the Brahmins and Yajna. End of quote. Then Srila Prabhupada says, therefore, through the popularizing of Hari Kirtan, or the Sankirtan movement, the Brahminical culture and Kshatriya government will automatically come back and people will be extremely happy. I thought that was, I mean, Brahminical culture, isn't that synonymous with Varnashrama?
Yes, of course it is. Another thing I'd like to point out is that we often emphasize the holy name, which certainly we should, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasized it, but he also emphasized Leela, and Rupa Las Prabhu said Avatar Vad, that we are also Avatar Vad. So we emphasize Leela, we have Rathyatra, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to go into ecstasy when remembering or even enacting Leelas. So Leelas are essential. Prabhupada once wrote Aniruddha in the very early days, probably 68, that we have unlimited Leelas. He was talking about Christian, the stations of Christ. He had visited a church in Canada, and he was saying that, well, they have these Leelas, this Leela of Christ going through the various stations at the end before he was nailed to the cross. So it's a very restrictive kind of Leela that they can celebrate, and yet they do. They celebrate it like anything. If you've been in a Catholic country, especially, or in New York, there are certain areas of New York that qualify as a Catholic country. So Leelas, he said, we can celebrate unlimited Leelas in unlimited cities. So I advocate we should spend in a large city, we should spend, you know, a lot of money, like maybe $1 million on Rathyatra, and then we spend a small amount of money, $100,000 each month on a Leela celebration. And Leela celebrations in parks. You know, when we have Varnashram spread all over with these millions of people, right, is for a big population. And we have all these Shudras, they can help us construct all these festivals, and they can do it themselves. You know, I saw in India how wonderfully they've engaged people they have programs for young people where they start them out, and then it's all managed by themselves. The brahmacharis come every 2 weeks and check on them. But so it's possible to do. We can set up communities and let them manage, and they do festivals and parks. This is Varnashram. Sankirtan and Varnashram. Sorry.
Prabhu, you said that they're forcing Mother Earth to produce. What are some examples of that? How can Mother Earth be forced anyway? And it appears that there's depletion rather than increased production. You said they're forcing Mother Earth to produce.
Yes.
How is that? Give an example or two.
Yeah. One is that in the Bhagavatam, the seventh canto, the about Prahlad Maharaj and Hiranyakashipu, Lord Nrsimha. It says Hiranyakashipu forced the earth by fear. So the demigods were all afraid of Hiranyakashipu. So they were made to conform through fear. So the earth becomes afraid, and she yields through fear, and the oceans yield through fear. It says that the oceans yielded jewels and minerals, and the lands, they yield production through fear. So I assert that the modern systems of production are the same or similar. We have chemicals, and we're forcing the earth to produce beyond what the earth is comfortable producing. And the United States is one of the most, the most exploitative country for decades, many, many decades, especially starting in about the 60s, 70s. We required the earth to overproduce, and the future generations will naturally suffer from that. But this overproduction, overconsumption, is basically forcing the earth. So that's my example from ancient Hiranyakashipu through fear, and then modern. Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
I like that, the bad dude, yeah.
That's right.
And then, of course, she's the end, quote, Thanos, she's laughing, these guys are coming like foam.
On the ocean.
That's her, quote, Thanos. She's laughing, saying, if they came here with nothing to leave, with nothing, they'd think they're fighting between the stupid. So that's the final.
Yes. And they're trying to control the earth. But it's not that they can be successful. Either the earth herself will deal with it, like us puny people, or Vishnu will come. And if the problem becomes too difficult, Vishnu will come. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I guess that was my thought, was that, because we're taught, whether it's also through Christianity, and also that we're not given more than what we can't, you know, tolerate, I think, is the phrase. It's like God won't give you more, bigger test than what, you know, then he won't give you the ability or intelligence to deal with. So that's what I was wondering with Mother Earth, like, you know, Lord Chaitanya came, Krishna came, walked on the surface, on her surface, you know, she is palatable, this whole thing about premeval, you know, inhaling, exhaling, and she also purges or cleanses, right? So we have that in history with the flood and different things like that, right, that she can purge or cleanse or also go through purification. And so, yeah, that was what my idea or concern was, would Krishna give her more than she could bear, right?
Did we give her more than...
No, with Krishna, would, you know, because ultimately not a blade of grass moves without the sanction of Krishna. So would Krishna place on her more than she could also bear?
Is
obviously
he give her more than
not.
Can
well...
Bear?
No, I don't think it's our business to worry about the demigods. Like I'm not really concerned about Indra's responsibilities or whether, I mean, there are Leelas, and Indra had a problem. He tried to flood Govardhan, and you know, Krishna protected the So there are Leelas. How can we understand about the demigods? We have trouble understanding our own lives, in my opinion. I do, anyway. So I don't think we should worry about whether the earth is overburdened. That's her relationship with Krishna. But it's our responsibility. We're, as devotees, we're demigods. Devotee is equal to demigod. And the demigods, those who are in the mode of goodness, sattva, our characteristic is that we're responsibility for maintenance. The demigods are responsibility for the maintenance of the universe, so we also have a maintenance responsibility. We don't have much of a creation or destruction responsibility. So most of the, especially in America, but many other countries and the modern culture is taking responsibility for destruction and creation also. They're very proud. They call it development, developing economy. Development. Everything is development. You have to be developed. If you have a democratic society, if you have good quality of life, if you have all these requirements, you're a developed person or developed country or advanced. They use those two words, advanced or first, yeah. And then, or they call MEDC or something like. Anyway, yes. So developed, advanced. So this is nonsense. Their only interest is creation and destruction. Very little interest in maintenance. If they were interested in maintenance, sattva, raja is creation and tama is destruction. So if they were interested in sattva, then why are they destroying the earth? Why are they over-exploiting the earth? That's a clear example. Well, of course, there are many other examples of why there's sattva is practically nil. But devotees, the duty of devotees is to influence society with sattva. Triguna.
Online they're asking, can you explain what it is?
From Bhagavad Gita, this Tribhir.
The whole world is under the
influence
of Timur.
Yeah. That
they want you to explain a little more.
Tibhir gunaih, I think that was the word
verse
I quoted. So a little more. It says, what is it? I've forgotten now. The first line is pritibhyang, something like that, on the earth. And divideveshu. How does it start? Natadashti. Pritibhyang ba divideveshu vapuna and sattvang something mukta prakriti jayar gunai. So the verse is that that on earth 39, yeah. So prithivyang means on earth, and divi deveshu, among the, deveshu means among the demigods, divi in heaven, so on earth, and vapuna, and again in heaven. So everyone, in other words, in this material world, ap brahma bhuna loka punaravartino juna, that punaravartino, that everything is revolving from Brahma down or up to Brahma. So the under the gunai, what was that last line again? Gunai prabhati jair gunai, yeah, prakriti jair gunai, but it's prakriti jair gunai, yes, Yeah, Jair means by the production of, or by the influence of Prakriti, Gunai, the three modes of material nature. So everything is under the control of the three modes of material nature. We shouldn't think that somehow devotees have escaped from material nature. We're devotees, just we're demigods just like the demigods. I mean, muktam means we're not, nobody is mukta. Nobody is free from the influence. So we're taking too much time. This is the book. We have only a few more. No, we don't have any.
They bought all of them yesterday.
No, but you can get them from you can get them from Amazon or from preferably from bookrights.com, which
no,
is
No. Yeah, you can get we don't have any more with us, but you can get them either from Amazon, any of my stuff, and also from Book Rights Press. With Maya Priya. She's publishing them. She's doing an amazing service because she actually is keeping all kinds of so many books from Prabhupada's disciples in print. Lots of them had gone out of print, and she's helping to keep them all in print, and it's a great service in my estimation, anyway. It's been a boon for me, and I think for Dayananda also. So thank you for asking. What?
Yes. Yeah, we most likely we will, but we want to be born in the family of one of you guys, so.
You mean my great-great-great-grandson.
Yes, thank you.
I need a tall person.
Yeah, do you really? Jai Prabhupada.
A tall person with